It's like every day.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the show.
We're on. It's Monday.
There's Ray. All right.
It's Monday. Yeah. We've got a lot to talk about. So you're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. So if you want to join the show, the adventure, the ride, the fun, it's sports, people. Let's have a good time. 718-664-9098. Like always, hit us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. The website's interactive. Photos, polls, standings, everything you need at rayandtaytoday.com. Tweet us, Facebook us, and that's at Ray and Tay Today. Ray, let them know how a busy Monday. Oh, man, how it's going down.
Well, we've got a lot of football to talk about, and the second two-thirds of the show will be football. But let's start it off, as we always do. We go around scouring the world of sports for breaking news. We'll talk about college hoops. Get ready, folks. The youngsters are playing. There's some movement in the top 25. We'll talk a little bit about college. We'll then transition to NFL. I'm sorry, we'll then transition to the NBA. We'll talk about big boy hoops. And Ray and Tay are pretty depressed these days. Our Knickerbockers are terrible with with nothing in sight except for maybe a few people coming back from injury. But we'll talk some NBA, some surprises, some surprise players, surprise teams. Then we'll get into the pigskin. We'll talk about college football. We'll talk about this craziness that happened over the weekend. A couple of crazy rivalry games. The game, OSU,
yeah.
Michigan, the Iron Bowl, Auburn, Alabama. Serious BCS implications. We'll get into that. And then we'll wrap up the Sunday activity in the NFL. So week 13, for most of you, the fantasy football determining week. We had six guys in our league tied at 6-7, so we're going to go to some crazy tiebreakers. But in terms of real football, what a crazy week. We had
playoffs.
The Sunday playoffs, and then we'll preview the game tonight. What a game, Seattle, New Orleans, and we'll even take a look ahead at the game on Thursday. So we've got a bunch of stuff to get into, so let's do it.
Well, you want to talk about some news, some breaking news. One thing I saw pretty interesting, I don't know if you saw this, the Padres acquired, was it Chris Stewart from the Yankees? A little baseball. Some, I think the hot stove is going to start to really heat up. We already had the big deal, right, you know, with your boy Kessler. And,
yeah,
Ian Fielder.
Kessler and Fielder.
But these small deals are starting to happen, so I don't know. What do you think about the Yankees, you know, the Padres and the Yankees, a little move there with Chris Stewart? And I'm not sure who the Yankees got back, but I think,
well, first of all, the Yankees are apparently still $80 million apart on Robinson Cano. So that one might get ugly. I don't know how that's going to play out. The A's apparently are trying to sign Scott Kazmir. The Pirates, you know, the Pirates wanted Chris Stewart. They wanted a catcher. Now, he couldn't hit. He had 211 with the Yankees. So the Pirates designated
a guy.
Well,
maybe he'll do something in the National League for the Padres.
For the Pirates. You know what it is? He's a good, solid backup, right? And they've got Russell Martin. So it's kind of deja vu all over again, right? he's gonna be trying to fight it out with their first rounder, this kid named Tony Sanchez, as the backup to Russell Martin. I think they only signed Russell Martin to a 2-year deal, so this might be the last year of Russell Martin's deal. So he's just an insurance policy, but we'll see. Yankees, you know, they signed Brian McCann, so obviously they have no need for him. They've got Romine back.
Which we spoke
up
about on the show, you know, like over a week ago. Well, neither one of us love that move. You know, that's the one problem. You know, I think for me, it's not getting him or Beltran. I want pitchers. I mean, Andy Pettitte is done. Mariano Rivera is done. Who is going to, you know, fill these spots? And, you know, Beltran and Cano and McCann, you still got to pitch.
Yeah, I think the Yankees will be, well, Yankees have position player issues too. So they got a lot of issues. When you don't make the playoffs, you got a lot of issues. The other bit of breaking news we need to get into is Steve Sarkisian coming back home. Comes back. He was 34-29 at Washington. And, you know, 7 years he was an assistant. And at 7 seasons he was an assistant at USC. So under Pete Carroll. So he's coming home. And unfortunately for Ed Orgeron, he did a good job of rallying the troops and really saved the season. But everybody wanted Sarkisian. And so the job was pretty much his to lose. And he stepped up and took the job. And so they got a young guy. He was born in 1974. So, you know, he's 39 years old. And he's got one of the top five coaching jobs in college football. So good for him.
Yeah.
Steve Sarkisian is going to right the ship there at USC, and I'm sure he'll do a great job.
Yeah, and real quick, J.J. Redick is out 4 to 6 weeks. Your boy Rajon Rondo is back to practice, you know, along with Kobe. And then last night, and we'll talk about it when we talk about the NBA, Anthony Davis, he's out indefinitely. I don't know what's, you know, fractured. I don't know if it was the right or left hand. But
left.
It was his left.
Yeah,
he broke his fall.
Carmelo drove into him, and as he was
falling
back, he broke
replay.
His fall with his hand.
That's kind of rough. I mean, and obviously they still won without him, but, I mean, you wonder, and I just was thinking about this. I don't want to throw it out there, but, you know, already in his young career, he's had a couple of injuries. I'm not saying Greg Oden or Sam Bowie, but you just want the young fella to stay healthy. You know, so that's a little, you know, a little rough. I don't know. So
he's just a thin guy. It's a bad fall. That's all right. It's no big deal. No big deal. Don't start saying Greg Oden and Sam Bowie and all these other big men. We don't need that. We don't need to put the negative juju on our boy Anthony Davis.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, going from him, let's look at it. Let's talk about it because he was a great college star. From a great team that has, you know, a bunch of ridiculous freshmen now. College hoops, man. I mean, we saw Arizona take down Duke. That was happening while we were live on the air on Friday over the Thanksgiving holiday. What I love about college basketball is you get, you know, all these tournaments. Syracuse, you know, they won the Maui against Baylor. Great game. So why don't you tell us after a weekend of top matchups, give us some of this top 25, man, because I'm really surprised.
Before we get into this, let me just tell you that Georgetown has just dismissed Greg Whittington, a junior forward. They kicked him off the team. So I don't know what happened there. He's had some injuries and some academic issues, but, 12.7 rebounds from last season. He was rehabbing his ACL, but he got kicked off the team, so that's not good. He was going to be the heir apparent to Otto Porter. But, so let's get into the rankings, right? So we've got our college basketball rankings. Michigan State at number one, Arizona number two. So both 7-0. And then you got the 7-1 Kentucky Wildcats at three and the 7-0 Syracuse Orange at 4 and the 6-0 Ohio State Buckeyes at 5. So pretty nice to be in Columbus right now where your football team is 2 and your basketball team is 5.
And so look, the defending champs are right there too, right? Louisville
rounding
still
out the
undefeated
top 10,
in number
so you got
7. Yeah.
Kansas at 6, Louisville at 7, Wisconsin at 8, Oklahoma State, another nice program, right? Oklahoma State, top 10 college football, college basketball, and number 10, Duke, 6-2, and still a top 10 team. And special shout out to Wichita State at 11.
Yeah, no, definitely. But, you know, and Baylor drops all the way down to 20. But let me ask you this. I'm surprised about Baylor dropping so low because they still got to the championship of the tournament. But and Dayton did great. They get in at number 25. But let me ask you this. Are you surprised about Duke being a 10?
No, I'm not surprised. And, in fact, I'm happy. I'm happy that they're a 10, and I'm happy that the voters didn't crush them because more teams, more top 10 teams should be encouraged to play top 10 teams, right? Their losses are to
Kansas and
this past week to Arizona.
And Arizona, yeah.
So you know, they've lost
them.
To 6-2. So, you know what? They're still a top team. They should be ranked in the top 10, top 12 teams in the country. And, you know, I like that the voters are not crushing them for losing because they lost to great opponents, which means they've also scheduled great opponents. So good for them. Whereas a team like Syracuse plays nobody. I mean, they did play in the Maui Classic, sure.
Yeah.
But other than that, they play nobody.
Traditionally, they don't play anybody. Well, listen, this year they're not going to get away so much with that because best you believe that ACC is going to be brutal. You know, that's that in itself.
So that's true. But pre-conference, Syracuse has been known to play Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, the YWCA, a couple of high school teams.
Listen, wait a minute. The turkey and everything should settle. You should have had some cool Hanukkah gifts. What's the venom? Ray's bringing the venom on
no,
Jim
no,
Boeheim. Come
saying,
on,
I'm
man.
Not bringing venom. I love Jim Boeheim. I'm just saying. I'm just saying that Jimmy's been known to schedule some cupcakes. That's all I'm saying.
All right. So let's jump into the big boys league before we get into the football. I want to start negative, and I'm sorry that I'm doing that, but at 3-13, losing 9 in a row, losing 7 in a row at the Garden, the Knicks lost to the Pelicans, 103-99, and it was just ugly. The only way to describe it, I mean, yes, Anthony Davis went out, but it didn't matter. Ryan Anderson hit 31, was shooting threes left and right. They couldn't stick him or guard him. He was hard to guard. Shout out to E. Burgos, right? He was hard to guard. But all you had to do was come at him and make him dribble. They're just giving him wide open threes after three after three and not rotating properly on the pick and roll. And they couldn't get any defensive rebounds. The Knicks are in shambles. You know, hopefully we get Ian Begley on soon from ESPNNewYork.com, you know, working on getting him back on with us to talk Knicks. But you know, sure, even as a reporter, it's rough covering this situation. What happens? What changes? Is it a trade for Rondo? Do they get rid of Woody? I mean, there's rumors everywhere. What do you think is going to happen? Because Dolan's not going to sit still for this the whole season, and 3-13, even with Chandler being out and Amari's playing like horrible. The one shining light is Tim Hardaway. He had a great game last night. What do we do?
Yeah, that's
what's
nice to
happen?
Get somebody late in the first round that actually can make a difference.
Yeah.
So if that Kenneth Faried trade is still on the board, you take it. But I don't think it is. So I wouldn't, if I was Denver, trade Kenneth Faried for Iman Shumpert. But the Knicks are fundamentally in trouble. And I'm going to say something here that might be considered blasphemous. But my theory was always that it starts from the top, and it starts – and to me, the two most important players on the Knicks, players in quotes, are Jim Dolan and Carmelo Anthony. And Carmelo
Anthony –
You can't
trade the owner.
You can't trade the owner, so you're stuck with ownership. But when they brought Carmelo in, the problem I had with Carmelo is that he's a great – individual player and an individual contributor, but he doesn't make anybody around him better. And Carmelo's style is such that he needs the ball, and he needs the ball at isolation, he needs the ball at the elbow, and everybody just sits around, and it's so easy to get out of sync with Carmelo. So when he's on the court, you need to build a team around him, and you need to almost start from scratch and say, okay, we've got Carmelo, we need to build a team around him. So this Knicks team, for some reason, can't play and can't get the most out of the combination. So the sum of the parts is less than the individual pieces. So I hate to say this, but I think you start over. I would say that you just rebuild without Carmelo. As crazy as that sounds, I think the Knicks are doomed to mediocrity with Carmelo. It's almost like our guy, Bernard King, for a while there, you know, you weren't winning games. Now, granted, Carmelo's made the playoffs and may even, they got the number two seed last year. But I think that this team, for some reason, the chemistry isn't there. And I don't know that it's Mike Woodson's fault. So you could try to replace Woody, but I don't know that another team could get a better result. Maybe this year, you know, it's possible. But I just see this team as fundamentally not a good mix of characters. So I think you rebuild without Carmelo Anthony. You let Carmelo go try and win a championship somewhere where he's not the one guy where everybody stands around and looks at him. So, you know, it's not like the Allen Iverson syndrome.
But
so
let me ask you this, right? Who's – okay, I agree with everything you said. And the premise, I guess, of this, is it Woody's fault – or do you have to, if you have a Melo, allow him to get all those shots? You know what I'm saying? Do the players, because they played well in the beginning of the season last year when they shared the ball, and it wasn't just Melo scoring. Then the second half of the season in the playoffs, they went to Melo scores and everybody stands and watches. So does that go on Woody? Does that go on Felton? Is it a philosophy? Do they have to somehow say, Melo, look, for us to win, you've got to not have the ball as much? And I guess the other problem is, who's the consistent scorer? Because I guess
that's
Amari's
the problem, right?
Not back. Right. JR is not consistent enough. Because to be honest with you, I mean, look, Brooklyn has got a couple of wins, so they're 5-12. We are at 3-13, man. That is
worst team in the East, along with the Bucks.
It's so depressing. So, I mean, you know, yeah, maybe we get Andre Wiggins. I mean, you know, but we don't even have our draft pick this year. So it's even more depressing. So, you know, you got to win, right? You got to win. I mean, you know, 6-10. I mean, you're only a couple games out of playoffs, right, because Toronto is 6-10. So I don't know. Maybe we should just leave the Knicks alone. It's whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Let me ask you this on a positive note. NBA Finals preview. The Pacers won last night in L.A., and they play the Blazers tonight. This is a fascinating thing because at 16-1, they are clearly, you know, way ahead in the Central. The Bulls are 7-8, and they're making it known that they want to get the number one seed. Now, look, the Heat are only a couple games behind them at 14-3, so everybody that wants to write the Heat off, they're crazy. But what do you think about the Pacers? And, you know, before we talk about the Western Conference in the East, are the Pacers, are they on pace?
You know, there's nothing you can say negative about the Pacers, except for possibly point guard play. And, you know, George Hill, we always said, is a good young player when he was with San Antonio, and now he's a solid, you know, NBA veteran. So the thing is, if you need a basket and you need a critical decision made in the fourth quarter and the ball's in George Hill's hands, you know, he's not an elite point guard. And most of the time, you're winning in this league with an elite point guard. But having said that, these guys are big. They can run. They can play half court. They're tough. They can bang. They have a star in Paul George. They have a star that used to be the star in Danny Granger, who, when he gets right and you know, second half of the year in the playoffs, if he can find his niche as kind of an off-the-bench, you know, sixth man a la, you know, Kevin McHale type, this team is tough. And this team for the last 2 years has given the Heat all they can handle. So I love what the Pacers are doing. I think that pure shooting might be their other issue, right? Deshaun Stevenson. Mm-hmm. Stevenson is he's not a great pure shooter. So if you need a basket from the perimeter, you're probably going to look to Paul George to get it, or maybe a Danny
Granger.
Right, Ranger.
Lance is, he's not.
Lance Stevenson, yeah, it's Deshaun. Lance Stevenson.
But he's really improved his game, though.
He has, and he's got an all-around game. I mean, and if you think about it, these guys have all-around games, right? They can play on both sides of the court. Unlike, you know, for example, like a J.J. Redick, who comes in there and is a specialist for the Clippers, and he's one of the best shooters in the NBA, broke his hand out 6 to 8 weeks. But he only plays one side of the ball, right? But Paul George, so their best players can play on both sides of the ball, right? Paul George can play on both sides. David West can play on both sides. Even Roy Hibbert can contribute on both sides. Deshaun Stevens is not a great offensive player, but he can score a little bit, and he can play on both sides of the floor. So I love the two-way play of the Pacers, and you know what? I can't wait. I can't wait to see if this is the year that they huff and they puff and they finally beat Miami. I don't predict it right now, but they look like the only team that's got a chance in the East.
Well, let me talk to you about this real quick. Looking at the East and the West, let's look at a couple of potential new and sort of, I guess, old coming back all-stars. You got Kevin Love and George both, you know, dropping 23 a game, putting up great stats. Kevin Martin and LaMarcus Aldridge. These are two guys for Minnesota and for Portland who are, you know, leading their team, doing great things, great stats. But the 1-2 punch of Love and Martin. Martin at 23 a game, and Love, you know, a little bit over 23, and then Aldridge at 22. Is this the case where you see Aldridge finally getting that all-star that he deserves, along with Stephen Curry and maybe even Monte Ellis, who now that they're not playing together, Monte is doing his thing in Dallas and is number 10 in the league in scoring, and Curry is, you know, Curry to me this year is going to have to be an all-star if he continues this. So what do you think about that when you look at the West? Because obviously we know, okay, in the West it's the Spurs and the Blazers. We know the standings. But what about these players? What about an Aldridge? What about an Ellis, a Curry, and a Kevin Martin?
Yeah, look,
did
I think
get some
Kevin
shine?
Martin, Kevin Martin will have a tough time making the making the All-Star roster just because it's so tough as a guard in the West. But you know what? He's seventh in the league in scoring.
Yeah, but Kobe's spot is going to be missing, right?
That's
so you got to think
Kobe's
about that.
Kobe's spot is going to be missing. But your boy Dame Lillard is trying to do his thing. Got even a guy. Here's a guy, Ty Lawson, a guy who every year is improving in points and assists, right? I remember who set the record for that. I think it was Derek Harper back in the day when he was with Dallas and then eventually with the Knicks. Every year he got better points and better assists. So Ty Lawson is doing big things. I love that, you know, the forwards in the West, LaMarcus Aldridge and Kevin Love are definitely going to be all-stars, along with Kevin Durant. I mean, these guys just can't be stopped. You know who else is going to make it, maybe for the first time, is your boy DeMarcus Cousins in Sacramento. So a guy that can be a knucklehead at times, but he is a load. He is a lot to handle. So there's going to be a lot of first-time all-stars potentially this year, especially in the West. And that's great. That's fantastic. You know, as much as I love Tim Duncan, as much as I love Kobe Bryant, as much as I love, you know, these perennial all-stars.
It's time to bring in the next best.
It's time to bring them in, especially if you didn't make it this year. It's not like, you know, like we said about A.J. McCarron, it's not lifetime achievement. It's are you the one of the top three or four players at your position this year? Period. It's not that complicated. It's are you during the, you know, in the first 40 games, are you a top player at your position in your conference?
Definitely agree. So, look, I think it's about that time. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk college football. BCS Rantech.
This is a song my dad dedicated to my mom.
I love my wife. So here it is from the start of the show. Bring out the horns, cause you know I gotta go. Yes, baby, I love to spit it right, cause it's more than...
We're back, and we're back to talk college football. And I don't know where you were on Saturday, but if you weren't near a TV, then shame on you. Because there were some classic games. And they were in these rivalry games too. So first let's build up the build it up. Let's talk about two in particular. So let's first talk about Ohio State Michigan, the game. Ohio State wins 42-41. Michigan goes for two at the end of the game. So let me know what you thought about Michigan throughout the game going for two at the end.
Look, we both picked Ohio State, but what Gardner did and the way Toussaint and just Michigan played, they earned the right to win that game. So I don't mind going for two. My problem was the play. You got to have Gardner, who is bigger, better, stronger, and much faster than your boy Denard Robinson from last year. So have him on a bootleg so he could potentially run it or pass it.
Well, he was on a bad ankle, though. Remember, his ankle was bad.
Yeah.
I mean, he took 400 and some odd yards. But I hear what you're saying. It's one play.
Right. Just give it a little bit of the option. I also, you know, look, Ohio State, I give them credit. They went down the field and scored it so quickly. So I think the coach, you know, and he said it. He was like, look, we weren't stopping them. So I wanted to win the game. I didn't want to go to overtime. But maybe you try it in overtime, you know, the way they have it set up. Maybe you stop them one play and maybe you get the touchdown and they get a field goal. But it is what it is. I think in a rivalry game, you don't knock Ohio State for that. But I still think they need to clearly beat Michigan State to stay at number two and not have Auburn, who if they beat Missouri in the SEC title game, not have Auburn lead. Look, if Auburn wins to me by 10 or more and Ohio State wins, you know, beats Michigan 10 or less, I think it could flip-flop. That's sort of how I see it because – I really think Auburn's played an amazing schedule, and Ohio State is, you know, at least you'll say this, right? When you're looking at the top teams now in the top 10, well, Michigan State, they finally made it. They're in the top 10. The team that I want to talk about is Arizona State, but we'll get to them. Amazing smacking, putting up, I think it was, 58 or 62 points against Arizona, and they are ready for Stanford at number 11 in the country, and Stanford being number 7 to host the Pac-12 championship next weekend. So Friday we'll preview all the championship games, but tell me this. Do you go with the philosophy of Ohio State just being undefeated and they win no matter what they play Florida State in the championship? Or does Auburn have a shot?
I'm torn on this one because
yeah, it's hard.
Alabama's better than Ohio State. Alabama is better, and I'm not even saying Auburn. I'm saying Alabama. Alabama's better than Ohio State. I think Alabama's better than Auburn too. But they lost, so they got to take their medicine. So if you're telling me that there are two teams in the SEC that are better than Ohio State, and neither of them is potentially going to be in that national championship game, that's kind of hard. I didn't even say Florida State. So to me, Ohio State is probably the fifth best team in the country. But so one part of me says these are not the two best teams. So if Florida State plays Ohio State, right, if everybody wins out, then it's set up to be Florida State, Ohio State in the BCS championship game at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Now, having said that, Ohio State's not the second best team in the country. So part of me is conflicted to say they're not the second-best team in the country. They don't deserve to be in the BCS championship game. The other part of me says, wait a minute here. Why do we have a big six, you know, six big conferences? Why do we have automatic bids to the BCS championship game? The guys at Ohio State did nothing but win for 2 years in a row, haven't lost a game.
Yep.
And assuming they beat Michigan State, what more can they do? Right,
play their schedule.
You can't play their schedule and win. Now, granted, they only won by one against Michigan. Okay, so you could say take away a little bit from on style points. But in a Big Six conference, to go undefeated and then to win your conference championship game and then to not even be considered for the national championship team against a team that has a loss, that's hard to swallow. That is hard to swallow. So
yeah, but how far apart are the conferences right now?
Yeah, well, look,
they're pretty far.
SEC is the NFL, you know, the NFL South. So
right, so I'm saying how, I mean, be honest, how far are they apart? They're pretty, out of the Big Six, right now, we can easily say that the ACC, Big 12, and Pac-12 are all better than the Big Ten now.
Yeah, you could make an argument that two, and if you want to get crazy, you could potentially throw Missouri, Clemson, South Carolina in there as well. You could argue that Ohio State could be the fourth or fifth best team in the SEC, and they're playing for the national championship because they didn't have to play in the SEC. I'm conflicted. I'm conflicted. But apparently the polls are such that it looks like that Ohio State will not be caught by Auburn. So if Auburn beats Missouri, or the winner of Auburn-Missouri, but let's just say it's Auburn because they're the higher-ranked team, they won't catch Ohio State, and it'll be Ohio State-Florida State. The computers have them so far apart that they won't catch them. But, you know, we'll get into that. We'll get into that after Saturday's game. But let's talk about the game of the year. I don't think it's ridiculous to say that might be the game of the past, you know, decade.
Can I tell you
rivalry.
Something? Nick Marshall, we haven't spoken his name yet, but I got to say he deserves to be maybe in some of the Heisman talk because not just this season, not just this game. Marshall and Mason are amazing, but Marshall, man, Auburn to me, that was one of the most impressive wins I've ever seen because, yes, Bama made some horrible, sloppy mistakes, but there was a time where the game could have easily slipped away, and Auburn refused to give up. They didn't stop, you know, their triple-headed monster, their option. They didn't stop running. They didn't stop doing what they do. And when they had to, they made big enough plays, even what I was on the 3rd-and-12 to stop McCarron or whatever on that last possession. They did what they had to do to be in that position. And it's just almost ironic that Saban challenged it for 1 second left, and that 1 second is what basically killed them. I don't think they should have gone for that far of a field goal. I think only bad things can happen when you attempt a 56 or 57 yarder. I think after, look.
With the last play of the game, you have a chance.
You have a chance to go to overtime, and if you're better, you win.
You have a chance to win if somebody says to you.
I know, but you're not going to. But what are the percentages, right, of you making a 57-yarder, and it's not your kicker who's been horrible. It's your redshirt freshman.
Let's say the percentages of making 57
yards. He wasn't even warmed up yet.
No, but let's say the percentages of making a 57-yard field goal are 20%. What is the percentage that it'll get blocked for because it was only 1 second left, right? So it's a lot. If it was 15 seconds or 20 seconds, maybe. But it was the last play of the game, and the percentage of it being blocked and returned for a touchdown or being caught at the 7 yards deep in the end zone and being returned for a touchdown are almost none. So you got to go for the win. You definitely have to go for the win. I don't have a problem with Saban. I have a problem with his teams that are usually prepared, his team not being prepared to defend that kickoff return. But right now, no, I don't have a problem with him going for it. Hold on, we have a caller.
Yeah, I'm not gonna kill him for it, but
you're on the air?
Hey, guys, Mike in Pittsburgh. How's it going?
Oh, Mike, long time no
Mike,
speak. How
what's
you doing?
Up, buddy? Happy holidays.
Well, hey, thank you. Hey, I got to talk about the Knicks here. I think it's safe to say now that the Carmelo Anthony to New York is a complete failure. They never sniffed a title, never in contention. Last year they got hot at the end of the year. But I think it's the biggest mistake the Knicks can make by re-signing this guy. In fact, I'll take it a step farther. At this time right now, I say if you're the Knicks, you sell. You get rid of Anthony. Stoudemire will be gone after next year, and you rebuild. Unfortunately, if they tank this year, their draft pick is going to go to Denver. So they're not going to be in the Andrew Wiggins, you know, Jabari Parker sweepstakes anyway. It's just a complete mess. I don't think you can re-sign him, guys. I think his best basketball is behind him. Obviously, he's not a player that can make the rest of the team better. And I think if you're going to give him a max contract, it's a complete mistake. I say you get rid of him now while you can and get something.
I think you're right. I think everything you said is completely correct, and it's sad as a Knicks fan for me to have to admit to it and say it, but forget not being in the Wiggins sweepstakes. Maybe you're not trying to trade for Rondo to appease Anthony. Maybe you're trying to trade for Rondo or move Melo for Kevin Love to get real or new guys in here to win a championship. And maybe we can't get a first-round pick for Melo, but maybe we can try to package and do two major deals to get a Love and a Rondo or combinations of new players and just let Amari run off the books. I think you're exactly right. And it's hard to admit, you know, I loved the first night when Melo was back and just all that feeling, but it's all gone. And he's enough to win in college hoops in Syracuse, but it's not for the NBA. You're right. I can't say anything else.
If you guys remember, when I called this show and I said when they re-signed J.R. Smith, it was a mistake. I know he had a good year last year, sixth man of the year, but watching those playoffs in Indiana, it just told me if the rest of the team goes down, he's going to go down with them. You know, I just don't understand, you know, the Knicks thinking here. You know, I actually think you keep Shumpert. I think he's the one piece, you know, a solid role player that you have. Other than that, you know, I don't know.
Well, you're right. Shumpert and Hardaway. Keep Hardaway and Shumpert. I think you're totally right with that. And, hey, give this guy credit. Bunyarny's actually come here and played pretty darn well, six block shots last night. And, you know, he's not a big rebounder, but he's scoring. So, you know, you'd like to see if you can keep Chandler, but you might have to get rid of Chandler to get other pieces.
I think you look back. I actually think that you almost always trade for size. And the Knicks have had problems with rebounding and interior defense with the exception of Chandler. So that's why if Kenneth Faried were on the table, I would scoop him up in a minute. But having said that, the problem with Carmelo, so back to Carmelo, the problem with Carmelo is there's no data on him that leads you to believe that he can win as the primary guy in the NBA. He won in college. He won with a bunch of superstars around him in the Olympics. But if you look at the teams he had in Denver, he only got out of the first round once, and that was when he had Chauncey Billups on his team. And even with the Knicks, where they put a front court around him of Amari and Tyson, and granted there's been a lot of injuries, it's not a winning formula. So the Knicks have to really step back and say, look, if our aspiration is to win a championship, which we haven't done since 1973, then I'm not sure you can do it with Carmelo. The formula in the NBA, you definitely need two superstars at least. But when one of those superstars is Carmelo Anthony, it takes a very special second superstar to play with him. And I'm not sure that the Knicks have that. So I wholeheartedly agree the Knicks need to start over. And it starts with your superstar and building around somebody else.
Yeah, in my opinion, guys, I think he would be the perfect number two player for a team with a solid coach, a disciplined coach, you know, that where he has his role as a scorer. But you're exactly right. He's not the number one player on a team that can win you a championship. But if he goes to a team and he's on board, you know, has his head straight and buys into the system, he would be a perfect number two, a complimentary player to another superstar. And I'm not buying the Lakers with Kobe Bryant because I just can't believe Kobe Bryant can turn around and be one of the top players in the league after, you know, his age and this injury. So I think there's a role for Carmelo Anthony. I just don't know where it is. You know, maybe Dallas or something like that. Cuban seems the type of, owner that might splash and try something drastic like that.
Maybe Portland. Maybe we take a chance if we could steal away Lillard or C.J. McCullough, who are like and, you know, a Wes Matthews or some other players and some picks. I mean, maybe LaMarcus Aldridge and Anthony. I don't know. Either way, you're right, and you totally called it, and I remember your J.R. Smith call, and you were right on that. You hit it head on. But I got to ask you this before we let you go, because we're heading to the NFL. What's going on with your Cowboys, and can they hold off the Eagles?
And I said this all along, guys. They might be able to hold off the Eagles. Whoever wins that division is getting their butt whipped in the first round of the playoffs, playing the wild card against the Niners, Carolina,
yep,
the Saints, whoever you want to put there. Because, you know, looking at it now, looking at the schedule, they play Chicago next week, and then a big break here. They play Green Bay, and it's looking more and more like Aaron Rodgers is going to be shut down for the season with his injury. So that's another possible win. And then you got the Redskins, and then obviously you play, you know, the Eagles the last game of the year, which is probably going to decide the division. I think personally, guys, that Dallas losing the last 2 years, the last game against the Giants and the Redskins on the road and not getting in, is going to help them this time. And I think they would beat the Eagles at home. But whoever gets in out of those two, you know, they're not going anywhere afterwards.
Yeah, not only they might lose, they'll probably be home dogs by, maybe 5 points.
Yeah.
With either the Niners, or the Carolina Saints.
Panthers, yeah.
Absolutely.
No, you're right. Listen, Mike, as always, great call. And keep on listening and keep calling in. We love it, Mike. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take care.
Take care. So that's the perfect segue. Mike took us there. I mean, you know, instead of going to the AFC first, let's look at this NFC. And, you know, tonight
we'll
preview the game.
Caller. We got
okay,
another caller.
Right.
Probably wants to talk some NFL. Looks like this is Hank on the line. Big Hank.
What's up, y'all? How you doing?
What's going on?
Good, good. What's up, Hank?
Yeah, I'll be very, very brief because I know you guys want to talk NBA. The Knicks have 3 wins. This reminds me a lot of teams trying to chase the Lakers back in the day. It's the same thing about Chris Webber doesn't make anybody better, blah, blah, blah. And what happened was they tried to chase the Lakers, and they destroyed their team for like a decade. They said the same thing about Clyde Drexler. Clyde Drexler couldn't make anybody better, and they couldn't beat the Lakers, and they kept them and tried to put pieces around them, and then they ended up getting rid of them, and they destroyed their team for a decade. Let's not be so apt to just get rid of Carmelo and completely start from scratch.
So are you re-signing him to his max deal that he wants? I mean, because that's basically the decision. Either you re-sign him to the max deal, and you get him for another four to six years.
And then you're the Milwaukee Bucks of the 80s. Hank, if you keep Melo,
mm-hmm,
and you're facing the Eastern Conference with the Pacers and the Heat, unless you can make a deal to get Rondo, I don't see a way with this current roster keeping Melo that your team is going to, the Knicks, will get better to leapfrog the Pacers or the Heat. Tell me how they could, real quick.
I personally think that if you get rid of Melo, you guarantee that you won't do that. And I think
I know, but what do you do with him? What do you do with him? JR is not your number two scorer, and Amari will never be healthy again to be the number two scorer.
I think the key to resurrect the Knicks is to try to get Amari to retire so they can use that money to upgrade their roster. Because let's be honest, we got a bunch of guys on the Knicks that are overpaid and are not that good. And they basically get run out of the building by 22-year-olds. I mean,
the only way this will work, Hank, is if somehow what you said about Amari, and we could do something to get in Kevin Love to play with Melo.
You know,
otherwise, you got to get rid of Melo.
Kevin Love is not, by the way, what does he want? What has he done in the NBA? I mean, what has he done in the world?
Kevin
Love has never had help in Minnesota. He's never had help in Minnesota, and he's always at the best power forward shooting threes besides Dirk. He's a rebounder and a scorer.
He's a great
Kevin Love
player.
Mixes it up every night. He's one of the best power forwards in the NBA right now.
He is a great player, but he is a complimentary player. So if you're going to bring Kevin Love to the Knicks, you better as hell keep Melo.
I don't agree with that. I think they're
going to be another expansion team, just like where he was, and they're not going to win. Let's not elevate these guys to look, I mean, let's just face it, right? Nobody's beating Miami unless Dwayne Wade gets hurt. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So,
well, the only person that has a chance is a healthy Paul George and a healthy Granger, six man off the bench. They actually have a real shot.
They're the only team that has a chance. So what we're doing here is trying to build a competitive playoff team. Forget about beating Miami, and frankly,
I know, but I don't want to be the Milwaukee Bucks of the 80s and lose in a second round every year to the Sixers, which is the equivalent of the Pacers right now. I don't want to do that. I do not want to be the Milwaukee Bucks of the 80s. And that's what the Knicks would be.
So you want to start over with a bunch of young guys and not be the Milwaukee Bucks, but be what? Pick a team. Right?
The Bobcats. The Bobcats. Look, you're saying this, and I know that this is sort of the truth. Having Melo, it at least gives you some sort of dream or hope, and things could fall in the right place. Someone could get injured, and then you could have a chance to win. And if you don't have Melo, you got the Bobcats or the Bucks now, and you're just never going to do anything. And I kind of agree with that, too.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, look, I hear you. It's frustrating, but Melo's not the problem. We don't have another guy who can consistently score 10 points.
But here is the problem, though. When you sink all that money into a guy, he came in 2003 after he won the national championship, right? So he's going to want some, whatever the max number is for him, 20-some-odd million. The problem is you're going to have all that money locked into him. You still have Amari under contract for two more years, for this year and next year. So even though you're right, the financial resources that go his way prevent you from bringing in, you know, another star. And Miami was able to get three stars at $15 million apiece.
That's why I'm saying Amari's not Amari's the problem. It's not Mel.
Yeah, look, the problem is
needs a Robin. You know, every Batman needs a Robin, and there is no Robin here. There's none.
No, you're right. J.R. Smith, not a Robin.
Real quick, help us transition to the NFL.
Tell us
about your Dolphins, and tell us if you think your Dolphins could potentially capture that sixth seed in the AFC.
They lose the tiebreaker with the Ravens, though. That's the problem.
I don't think they're good enough, to be perfectly honest. I don't think they're good enough. We can't get all excited because we beat up on Geno Smith. You know what I'm saying? That's just look. It's a great rivalry. I don't like the Jets. You guys know that. I love to beat up on them, but that has nothing to do with the playoff run. There's nothing. I personally don't think the Dolphins are good enough. And what I'm trying to do is just make sure that we can keep our quarterback healthy enough to give us a better team. Because at the end of the day, you know, we've got to rebuild our offensive line. And until we do that, we're not going to have a running game. If you don't have a running game, then you have a one-dimensional
offense. Next season, Hank, real quick, do you get a new running back for the Dolphins, and is Incognito or Martin on your roster?
Neither of them are on the roster. And I build the offensive line first before I get a running back because, let's be honest, you know, look, from what the Colts showed you, you know, putting a bunch of resources into a running back you think is the man, you know, they're rolling with a guy who, you know, what do you call it?
It's a waste. Yeah, Richardson was a waste.
So now they're starting a guy who they had the whole time. You know what I mean? We've got to rebuild the offensive line, and that's how it goes. It doesn't go running back first. It really doesn't.
All right, Hank, we're going to let you go, but I'll tell you this. I'm rooting for you in the real ball playoffs because me and you split 1-1. I got you last week, but both Ray and Tay are out of our fantasy football league playoffs for real ball, and so my money's on you to take it all, and you better win it, man.
The number two seed, bring it home.
I need to get some help out of my running backs, though. I mean, I'm falling down. There's no consistency, but I'm going to do my best, fellas. Have a good one.
All right.
Thanks
for calling. So, you know what? Let's do this. Before we finish up everything, let's preview the Saints and the Seahawks. This is the question. Are they the team that went to New York and got physically smacked up? Or are they the team that went to New England and it took a Brady miracle, you know, for their two losses? Because the Saints are legit. We know what they are at home. And on the road, in Seattle, will they be out physicaled, or can they go and shock everybody and play with the Seahawks and pull off the upset? That's sort of the question. I'll say for me real quick, I think that they give everybody a surprise, but I think the Saints wind up losing 23-20. I'll take the Seahawks. I just think Russell Wilson will do enough, even without Percy Harvin, whether it's Golden Tate, whether it's Lynch or the defense scoring, they'll be able to do enough to slow down the Saints.
Slow down.
They're going to brand newbie in them, basically. 23-20, Seahawks.
See, I think the Seahawks might suffer from Kansas City Chiefs syndrome, which is that they're – or from 2 weeks ago. Not this Kansas City Chiefs. They got blown out by the – or not blown out, but gave up 35 to the Broncos. I think that this – This Seahawks team, even at home, I don't think against the Saints team that they can put up 30. And I think that the Saints can put up 30 against anybody. So I look for the Saints to run up the score a little bit. Now, I won't be in the 40s, but I do think that the Saints are going to pull this out. I think it'll be a close game. But I think the Saints win 30-27. So even though the Seahawks are an excellent defensive team. And the
30
Saints
in Seattle, that's a lot.
30 in Seattle because it's prime time. And I feel like this is a special, special year, like 2009 when the Saints won it all. I'm not predicting the Saints to win it all, but I'm predicting this to be a special team. And they have the ultimate weapon. As Gronkowski was unstoppable last night, Jimmy Graham is unstoppable tonight.
Yeah, well, let's continue to talk about that NFC because I'll tell you this. The Arizona Cardinals gave the Eagles all they can handle. There's some bad calls at the end, but, you know, Nick Foles, who easily could be in the MVP discussion if Manning wasn't just a robot with 19 touchdowns and zero interceptions, Nick Foles has played his heart out. But you got to believe the Cardinals, you know, that was a rough blow, and now they're going to have to beat Seattle and San Fran to get back into the wild card. So it looks like the Niners will probably hold on and get that second wild card. Crabtree coming back. They look tough. The Panthers, they keep rolling with a great win. I guess my question to you is, with that Bears loss to Minnesota, ugh, that was just a killer. Do the Lions, is it Bears now? Do they have the division, or do you think the Bears still have a shot, or maybe even the Packers in the NFC North?
No, the Packers are done because Aaron Rodgers isn't going to be back this week. He may not be back for the rest of the season. And I think that the Detroit Lions, man, it's their division to lose. So they beat Chicago in week 4, and they beat Chicago in week 10. So they've got the tiebreaker over Chicago. So Chicago's got to beat them outright, and
right.
they're down a game. So they'd have to go, let's say, 3-1, and the Bears go 1-3. I'm sorry, the Lions go 1-3. So I like Detroit to hold on and win this division. I think the Bears made some critically bad decisions, especially going for it with Robbie Gould, who is typically money. But 47 yards is still 47 yards, and you go for a second down. Don't get that.
Nah, I would have gone third for it. At least third down. At least third down.
Yeah,
5 to 7
yards there makes a big difference. But yeah, I like the Lions. I like the Lions to win that division.
So Sunday Night Football is not so meaningful, but the Giants took care of the Redskins, and you know, mathematically the Redskins are gone. But this one question, I mean, obviously both teams are 7-5 in the NFC East. The Giants are 5-7. They're still two games out. It would be, a miracle basically, but. You know, with the Cowboys being 5-1 in the division, they'd have to, you know, lose two more division games, and the Giants have to win two more division games, and they still would lose the tiebreaker. So they to win a division, the Giants have to basically win every game.
Giants
and the
are
Cowboys
not winning
have,
the division. It comes
yeah,
down to
I know.
17,
so, okay.
Cowboys.
So basically, you answered it. The Giants are done. It's going to be between the Eagles and Cowboys. That's going to go to week 17. We both agree with that. Let's talk about something interesting, though. You mentioned Hank's team, the Dolphins. I said, you know, to Hank, and Hank is right. Look, they lose the tiebreaker with the Ravens. I said that to him, but they're not really a playoff team. But what the Bengals did in going into San Diego was probably made it hard for the Chargers to come back and win too. So we know Kansas City is probably going to hold on, even though they're reeling. They still played a good game. Alex Smith, give him credit. I told you in fantasy, Alex Smith is the man, and he went up and down the field on
and
that Broncos
played.
Team.
They didn't lose because of him. In fact,
he
gave them a chance
great.
To win. Everybody around him let him down. Alex Smith played
exactly.
great.
Totally.
Alex Smith.
But let me ask you this. In terms of that second wild card, can anyone take it from the Ravens? And is the only team that can legitimately do that still my Pittsburgh Steelers?
So the problem is the Pittsburgh Steelers have lost head-to-head, so that tiebreak might be difficult for them. The only other team by record that is in contention, the Jets. But the Jets, I told everybody, the Jets are not, when they were 5-5, I said, you know, Bill Parcells says you are what your record says you are. Jets are not a 500 team. I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets finished 6-10. So, or even 5-11. So the Jets are terrible. They're out. Buffalo, by virtue of this loss, is out. They could have
Dolphins
potentially
are not.
Been
I don't
in.
Think the Dolphins are legit either.
I think the Dolphins might have a chance. Their offensive line is horrible. But other than that, they're about as good or about as bad as the rest of these 6-6, 5-7 teams. I think the only other team is potentially San Diego, but this loss this past weekend to Cincinnati at home was pretty tough. You know, Tennessee is an outside chance, but Fitzpatrick, every time you get behind him, he throws a critical interception or makes a critical turnover.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately it comes down to Baltimore-Pittsburgh, and they beat you, so I've got to think that they're in the driver's seat.
No, they probably are, and I don't know, you know, remaining schedule, I don't know if the Dolphins have enough to really catch up that one game. They're tied with the Ravens, so they have a shot. You know, put it like this. They're the defending champs, and they're getting healthy. Pitta should be coming back, so it looks like Baltimore's got it. But being only one game back, you know, things are crazy in the NFL, and I could see the Ravens losing to Minnesota and the Lions. So their end-of-the-season schedule and the Bengals, so that's three more losses.
Well, the thing is the Dolphins, by schedule, have a pretty – easy schedule in week 16 and 17. It's Buffalo and New York. The only problem is the next 2 weeks are Pittsburgh and New England.
So that's what I mean. This is the thing. The Pittsburgh Dolphin winner could potentially leapfrog the Ravens. Think of it like that. I really do, because the Steelers still, the end of the season, they play Cleveland and they play the Dolphins. The Steelers still might have a shot. You don't know. I think they play an injured Green Bay, too. So this thing isn't over. I'll say that. I don't think it's over yet. This Thursday night, what do we have, the Texans and the Jaguars on Thursday night football? You know, for the fun of it, I'll take the Jaguars, man. My four-year-old, for some reason, loves the Jaguars. He wants a Jaguar jersey. It's an aggressive animal. And, look, he picked them to beat the Browns. I got to give William a huge shout-out, picking 11 picks right. He's up 4 or 5 games in the Ray and Tate Pickskin Pick'em. 92.2% of the time, a four-year-old versus the spread is winning. That's pretty impressive.
I'll take the Jaguars to beat the Texans.
I'm going to take them to Vegas, but I'll take the Jaguars to win.
Pack a couple of juicy juices and you know, some Oreos and put them in the car and let's go, Rain Man.
I'll take the Jaguars 23-20 over the Texans, you know, since we'll be on Friday. What do you think? The Texans will beat the Jaguars?
I think the Texans beat the Jaguars, just like the Jaguars did their thing and went into Cleveland and beat them. I think the Texans have lost too many in a row now. I think Case Keenum has a breakout game. Ben Tate runs well. Andre Johnson does his thing. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars have won a couple games, so now they're happy. So I think it's Houston's time. So I think Houston goes in there and wins 28-24.
Do the Knicks get a victory soon?
Yeah, I think the Knicks might even have a chance to make that 7th seed in the Eastern Conference. The conference hasn't run away from them. Like you said, they're 3-13, worst record in the conference with Milwaukee, but they only need to get to 6 or 7 wins to make the playoffs right now.
Well, look, they play Brooklyn. What's going to happen? Knicks, Brooklyn Thursday, and then the Knicks are at home Friday, home against Orlando. But the Knicks win one of the next two games. The battle of the boroughs, where no one really cares right now because it's the Knicks-Brooklyn, and they both stink. Do the Knicks go to Brooklyn and get the win in the first battle?
No. I think Brooklyn wins the home game and the Knicks win the following night against Orlando.
Okay. All right, man. I actually probably agree with you. I don't think it's enough, but, you know, maybe the rivalry will spark something. Melo will score 48 and they might win, but they're going to win one of those two games. I will say that. So great show. Busy callers, everything football, NFL, college, this and that, the next. Ray and Tay, we got it for you, baby. We got you covered. We got you covered. Check out rayandtaytoday.com with a lot of great, exciting things, and we'll be back on Friday. All right, Ray, tell them what do we enjoy doing?
We enjoy talking sports with friends.
We're
Ray
out.
Ray and Tay,
peace.
We're out. See you on Friday.
Monday Night Football, check it out. Should be fun.